now, America's number one show on pop culture and politics. This is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And like it or not, the forces of decency, sanity, and goodness are facing a war on multiple fronts right now. In Israel, the war has not only the continuation to cripple and immobilize Hamas and to try to get the surviving hostages home. There is now that war, it's not in the shadows anymore, with Iran. And there may be the need for what is called a new strategic concept. That's something that that Ilan Berman has written about very provocatively. Ilan Berman is the senior vice president of the American Foreign Policy Council in Washington, D.C. He's an expert on regional security in the Middle East. He's been called one of America's leading experts on the Middle East and Iran by CNN. And Ilan has provocative pieces that are right now appearing in the National Interest and elsewhere. He joins us concerning the need for a new strategic concept for the nation of Israel. Ilan, everybody has heard that Israel is fighting the war in Gaza to destroy Hamas and to get the hostages home. Do they need to redefine their war goals?
Oh, absolutely. And I think more profoundly, I think they need to redefine how they think about their security. Because if you go back and you look at the period before October 7th, the Israeli thinking about the Palestinians had really turned into something resembling a management strategy. Hopes had been very high in the 1990s that there was movement to a real resolution of the Israeli-Palestinian confrontation, but there was a failure to thrive in the Palestinian Authority. There was a tremendous amount of corruption. There was a bunch of Palestinian rejectionist groups that cropped up. And so the Israelis, sort of, you know, seeing this as a backdrop, said, you know what, we're going to stand back. We're going to cool our jets on the diplomatic front, and we're going to try to manage it. We're going to try to manage it in two ways. One is we're going to keep our eyes on the prize, right? We're going to create this extensive network of surveillance and sort of electronic tripwires so that we can see security threats emerging. And we are going to essentially allow trickle-down economics to kick in, right? As Israel's economy over the last generation has really blossomed, the idea was that there would be a trickle-down effect for the Palestinians. And as they improved in terms of their livelihoods, that, you know, you could transform groups like Hamas from being ideological actors into political actors. And, you know, both of those things, right, the surveillance front and the ideological moderation really proved to be bankrupt on October 7th. And so what you've seen since then has been Israel really moving in a completely different direction, redefining what it means to be secure in a post-October 7th environment, right? Things like military preemption, things like a war footing for their economy, things like an expansion of stockpiling of weaponry, an expansion of manpower in their military. But all of these are pretty seismic changes that are taking place in Israel right now.
And what does that mean in terms of the newspapers? The airways are full of speculation about how Israel is going to respond to the missile and drone attack by Iran against Israel itself. How is this new thinking going to impact Israel's decision as to whether to escalate or to restrain and pull back in terms of the struggle with Iran?
No, listen, I think it's going to impact it very profoundly, because let's be clear. What we saw over the weekend was an unprecedented event, because for decades, Israel and Iran had been engaged in this so-called shadow war throughout the region, right? It entailed a whole bunch of things, including cyber warfare and covert action and the assassination of Iranian nuclear scientists and things like that. But the red line was that neither country had ever attacked the other directly from their soil, right? And this was sort of the, you know, the upper limit of their escalation. Well, Iran over the weekend blew right past that limit, and it did so in an attack that was manifestly not just a demonstration attack. I know that there's, you know, there's been a lot of media coverage about, you know, the fact that the drones were slow moving, the fact that, you know, 99% of the projectiles were successfully intercepted, and some analysts have taken this to mean that this wasn't serious. This was deadly serious. You don't expend those types of resources in terms of cruise missiles and ballistic missiles and drones if you don't mean it. And so what the Iranians were trying to do, they may have calibrated in such a way that they signaled their moves ahead of time under the idea that at least some of it would be mitigated and they could sort of cap escalation, but they were deadly serious. And so now Israel has a real problem because Israel cannot afford not to act in response, because if it doesn't act in response, it enshrines a new status quo in the region, right? A new status quo where Iran feels emboldened to attack Israel or to attack other American allies directly from its soil without having any sort of response, without being sort of, you know, punched back in any serious way. How Israel responds, I mean, that's really the $64,000 question. We don't know the answer to that yet, but it's very clear to me that a response of some sort is coming.
What would you guess? I mean, obviously, you're not privy to the internal deliberations of the War Cabinet, at least I hope not, I mean, because it's supposed to be super secret, but your guess would be?
Well, I mean, here, you know, the United States casts a pretty large shadow. And it casts a pretty large shadow because not only because of the special relationship between the two countries, but because some of the things that Israel might contemplate doing in response are simply not possible without American support. So, for example, some analysts have talked about that, you know, this would be a really good time for Israel to move and strike Iranian nuclear facilities. It is. It would be. Except Israel can't do that without American support and American hardware, which the Biden administration has signaled very clearly that Israel does not have at its disposal on either front. So it's not going to be that, but it is likely to be something directly that erodes Iranian strategic capabilities. I think there are a couple of potential options, right? I mean, Israel can act in such a way that it really galvanizes the region against them in a way, in sort of in the reverse of what we saw this weekend. Or it could act in a way in which the region really rallies to its side. Something in the latter camp would be, for example, direct strikes on Iranian drone facilities, which would have the impact not only of eroding Iran's drone army, but also of ameliorating the pressure that a fellow democracy, Ukraine, feels at the moment, because drones have become a real export commodity for Iran. And stuff like this would really reset the table in a way, I think, that would be favorable to Israel. But we have to wait and see whether that's the option they choose.
Do you believe that there should be the separation of the vote to provide aid to Israel from the vote to provide the much-needed aid and ammunition to the Ukrainians?
Well, I think it's interesting. This is very much a moving target. It's clear to me that the aid for Israel has become unstuck, and it's become unstuck rapidly. Whether it can drag along Ukraine aid, which is much more politically controversial, along with it, remains to be seen. But I'm hopeful that what we see now, this sort of this stasis for the last 6 months or so on aid to both, has, you know, crisis tends to sharpen the mind. So I think we're going to see new movement.
Let us hope so. Ilan Berman, his most recent pieces are posted at our website at michaelmedved.com. Appreciate your insight and your wealth of information, and hopefully we'll see more hopeful developments to discuss next time we talk. Speaking of hopeful developments, what about the Battle of Gettysburg? We will get to that new front in the political wars coming up.
Michael Medved.
And on the Michael Medved show, just to let you know that there is a brand new offering at our Substack site. That's at michaelmedved.substack.com. And it's, I think, raises a very important question that could have a real impact on this election, which is the title of the piece is RFK and His Outsider's Voice, which asks the question, can a Kennedy, with all of the elite credentials you can possibly imagine or accumulate, pose successfully as an outsider, as a political rebel? And one of the things that helps him with that is also one of the things you notice first about Robert Kennedy Jr., which is his voice and the difficulty he has speaking, which is not his fault. It is a health problem, a dysphonia that he deals with, but it helps promote his idea as someone on the outside, getting ready to shake up the country in a big way and to shake up our two-party system. Check it out at michaelmedved.substack.com. Meanwhile, there is Trump in Gettysburg. I can't believe how much attention this has gotten, but it does really make you wonder about what's going on in Trump's mind and soul. And I had originally, when we talked about this clip, Trump was holding a rally in Schneckville, Pennsylvania. Now, I thought that Jeremy had written the name wrong. I thought he was actually at Shanksville. No, he wasn't. He was in Schneckville. And in Schneckville, he delivered an unforgettable history lesson to the whole world. Listen.
The Union was saved by the immortal heroes at Gettysburg. Gettysburg, what an unbelievable battle that was, the Battle of Gettysburg. What an unbelievable, I mean, it was so much and so interesting and so vicious and horrible and so beautiful in so many different ways. It represented such a big portion of the success of this country. Gettysburg, wow. I go to Gettysburg, Pennsylvania to look and to watch. And
okay, can we stop there for a moment? To look and to watch what? I mean, all the people who participated in the Battle of Gettysburg are dead. I'm not, aside from the 51,000 casualties that were incurred on both sides in 3 days of battle leading up to the 4th of July of 1863. Despite all of that, where he says, first of all, I'm not sure that President Trump has ever been to Gettysburg. And he certainly hasn't learned that much about it, as you will hear.
And the statement of Robert E. Lee, who's no longer in favor. Did you ever notice that? No longer in favor. Never fight uphill, me boys. Never fight uphill. They were fighting uphill. He said, wow, that was a big mistake. He lost his great general. And they were fighting.
So
never
stop.
Fight up.
Can we stop? Well, first of all, as people have pointed out, Robert E. Lee did not talk like a pirate. We'll never fight uphill, me boys, or people said like a leprechaun. Robert E. Lee did not have an Irish accent. He was from Virginia and a very old, distinguished Virginian family with a father who was one of the heroes of the American Revolution. Anyway, the whole idea that Robert E. Lee saw that the troops were disobeying his orders. They were fighting uphill. He was the one who, after the battle, offered to resign as commander of the Army of Northern Virginia. He sent a letter to Jefferson Davis taking the blame for the uphill charge that was disastrous. And it wasn't that people got out of control or they were disobeying his orders. They were obeying his orders perfectly, despite the fact that cooler heads and smarter generals like James Longstreet, who, by the way, became a prominent Republican after the Civil War. Anyway, he continued to talk about never fight uphill, me boys, words to live by.
Wow, That was a big mistake. He lost his great general, and they were fighting. Never fight uphill, me boys, but it was too late.
Okay, he lost his great general. Who the hell is he talking about? Which great general did he lose? In the battle itself, with the charge up to Missionary Ridge to the Union emplacement, it was a Southern general, Amistad, who died in the midst of that attack. And he died in the midst of the attack, Pickett's charge, and meeting his old friend Winfield Scott Hancock, who was the Union general who emerged as a hero from Gettysburg. Is President Trump talking about him losing his great general, Robert E. Lee? So he's talking about Stonewall Jackson. He had died after the Battle of Chancellorsville in May. This is in July of 1863. Anyway, Jimmy Kimmel had a...
That was the Battle of Gettysburg. What an unbelievable... I mean, it was so much and so interesting and so vicious and horrible and so beautiful in so many different ways. It represented such a big portion of the success of this country.
Well, I don't know that. That was easily the funniest seizure I've ever seen. He always sounds like a kid who forgot he had an oral report due on that day. More than 50,000 Americans killed each other over 3 days at Gettysburg, so I'm not exactly sure what he meant by beautiful.
Okay. John Stewart, also on Comedy Central, talked about the Gettysburg Address.
We got enough trouble keeping track of our own wars. Like this weekend, our former president and illustrious historian, Donald J. Trump, spoke near one of America's most hallowed battlefields. And if you thought Lincoln consecrated Gettysburg with his soaring rhetoric, well, buckle up.
Gettysburg, what an unbelievable battle that was. The Battle of Gettysburg, what an unbelievable... I mean, it was so much and so interesting and so vicious and horrible and so beautiful in so many different ways. It represented such a big portion of the success of this country. Gettysburg, wow.
That is plagiarized almost directly from my seventh grade book report, Gettysburg, Wow. I did not know.
It's, again, part of the amazing thing about this, and that I'm still trying to figure out, is he wasn't that close to Gettysburg. He was 2 hours away. Pennsylvania isn't a tiny state. And by the way, Pennsylvania was invaded. That was the whole defense by the Union. We'll be right back.
Medved Show.
I mean, it was so much and so interesting and so vicious and horrible.
And beautiful. Don't forget beautiful. They're actually photographs of the horribly mutilated bodies and dead bodies. And by the way, they gave a little bit of a misleading answer, one of the commentators on President Trump talking about the Battle of Gettysburg. There were 51,000 casualties. That included people who were wounded, but what wounded meant at that time was losing an arm or losing a leg. And one of the hardships of the period after the Civil War was that so many men on both sides came home alive, but in addition to the 700,000 casualties that killed in action, there were other hundreds of thousands who came home terribly crippled. The real Battle of Gettysburg, one of the things that President Trump did encourage me to do is to take a look at some of the beautiful writing that has been done about the Battle of Gettysburg, which was such an epic confrontation. It is very possible that if Lee had prevailed, if the charge up Cemetery Hill had been successful by Pickett's divisions, that the war would have gone the other way, and that we would have ended up as two separate countries, one dedicated to the proposition that slavery was worth preserving and actually virtuous somehow. And Falaise, of course, was a profound evil. Jeffrey Ward, who wrote a book based upon to support the special on the Civil War produced by Ken Burns, this epic TV event, he wrote, at a little after three, Pickett gave the order, "Up, men, and to your posts. Don't forget today that you are from old Virginia." A Confederate captain remembered, "We obeyed with alacrity and cheerfulness, for we believed the battle was practically over, and we had nothing to do but to march unopposed to Cemetery Hill and occupy it." Three divisions, 13,000 men, started out of the woods toward the stone wall at a brisk, steady pace, covering about 100 yards a minute. They were silent as they marched, forbidden this time to fire or to give the rebel yell until they were on top of the enemy. A Union officer watched them come. He wrote, "More than a half a mile their front extends, man touching man, rank pressing rank. The red flags wave, their horsemen gallop up and down. The arms of 13,000 men, barrel and bayonet, gleam in the sun, a sloping forest of flashing steel. Right on they move, as with one soul, in perfect order, without impediment of ditch or wall or stream, over ridge and slope, through orchard and meadow and cornfield, magnificent, grim, irresistible." And is that what President Trump had in mind by calling it beautiful? Well, that Union captain who was watching them come, it was, another Northern officer remembered, "the most beautiful thing I ever saw." By the way, of the Confederates who made it to the top of the hill, who weren't shot down on their way up, and who fought the Union there at the stone wall at the top of Cemetery Hill, Cemetery Hill took on a whole new meaning, because every single one of them was either killed or captured. There were no surviving Confederates to march down the hill. And later, Lee asked General Pickett to try to do a counterattack. He says, "I have no division," because his men hadn't survived. In any event, yes, real drama and meaningful encounter, the Battle of Gettysburg. The Battle of Majorcas is not comparable. The impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas, the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mike Johnson gave a press conference today. Just as the House was formally transmitting the articles of impeachment to the Senate, where the Senate is either going to debate the question of impeachment for Alejandro Mayorkas, which has no chance of winning because it needs two-thirds of the votes in the Senate, and there are only 49 Republican senators, for God's sake. But here is Speaker of the House Mike Johnson on Clip 12.
And Secretary Mayorkas has invited this catastrophe into our cities and our states, and he is responsible for the heartache of so many families across this country. He and Joe Biden engineered this catastrophe. They allowed it. They apparently desired it. And now we're all living with the results of it. He has repeatedly violated the public trust in a way that no previous cabinet secretary in the history of the United States has. And he has willfully defied federal immigration laws, willfully defied the will of Congress, the bipartisan will of Congress, bipartisan laws that were enacted before he took office and since. And after the House transmits the articles of impeachment to the Senate later today, we expect and we demand that all 100 senators listen to the arguments of the House impeachment managers. They have a constitutional and institutional obligation to do so. If Senator Schumer cares at all about the suffering of Americans and the disaster that Mayorkas has wrought at the border, then he will hold a full and public trial. The American people want a full and public trial. I think they deserve to see the evidence, and it will be unconscionable, and in my view, unconstitutional, if Chuck Schumer fails in that responsibility.
Okay, first of all, the question would be, how would Speaker Johnson respond to the new statistics just released for the first time since 2017? And that 2017, of course, is when Trump took over. Illegal border crossings went down. Arrests for crossing the U.S. border illegally fell slightly in March, authorities said, bucking a usual spring increase amid increased immigration enforcement in Mexico. And he keeps talking about the catastrophe that is associated with the porous border. And by the way, everyone agrees there should be tighter enforcement, better enforcement. There is a lawlessness which conservatives should rightly oppose, concerned with the border supervision right now, and it's not being well handled. However, when you talk about a catastrophe, we talked yesterday about the amazing decline of homicides in 133 major cities across the country, almost everywhere. So why is it, how is it such a profound catastrophe, especially when the indications are that we are not going through a migrant crime wave. We aren't going through a crime wave at all. We're going through a crime reduction. And in fact, the report of the Wall Street Journal, which is not pro-democratic, that is a conservative voice, but the Wall Street Journal analysis indicates that this is the sharpest decline in over the last year that we have had in criminality, in violent crime, the sharpest decline we've had in some 30 years since the mid-90s. And we ought to keep that in mind. And in fact, I have a piece on Substack that is worth checking out on that at michaelmedved.substack.com. We will be right back with more on the Mayorkas trial and the Trump trial and other confrontations.
The greatest show on God's green earth.
Look, it's a no-brainer.
The Michael Medved Show.
And on the Michael Medved Show, one of the things that I was just curious about, not having heard President Trump's entire oration at Schneckville, Pennsylvania, and yes, that's not trying to make fun of some name, that's the name, that's where it was. Pennsylvania is a crucial swing state, it's 19 electoral votes, of course, President Trump, whatever time he can seize in between his appearances in the courtroom, he's going to be campaigning. But one of the things that was at least aroused my curiosity was, why was he talking about the Battle of Gettysburg at all? He wasn't near Gettysburg. He's on the other side of the state. And so Jeremy went back, looked at the tape, and this is how he got onto the subject that has now become so celebrated of the Battle of Gettysburg on July 1st, 2nd, 3rd of 1863. Here is President Trump.
From Harrisburg to Pittsburgh, from Easton to Bethlehem, and from Johnstown to Allentown, we stand on the shoulders of American legends who poured out their blood, sweat, and tears for our rights and for our freedoms. And it's been a very rough period of time, I'll tell you what, for this country. It's never had. I don't think our country has ever been so low.
Can we stop there for a moment? Can we stop there for a moment? I don't think our country has ever been so low. I mean, the period he's talking about, the summer of 1863, at the same time that the Union was fighting for survival against this Confederate horde, it was a very formidable army. The Army of Northern Virginia had 70,000 people involved in that Confederate army that had invaded Pennsylvania. And by the way, while that was going on in New York City, we had the worst riot in all of urban history in America. We had the draft riots, where a number of Irish American gangs, then they were largely the ones responsible, fought pitched battles. They attacked a black orphanage. They were very anti-union, and things were pretty low when they actually had to take people fresh from the battlefield of Gettysburg and have them march to New York, which is not a short trip. And of course, it's not simply getting on trains, it's marching there. They actually sent reinforcements for the police department because we had lost total control, the forces of law and order, of a city gone wild during the draft riots, where people were lynched and died in the streets of New York City. America's never been so low as it is here in April of 2024. Okay, let's let President Trump just finish that thought.
We're going to get numbers like nobody's ever seen. I think we're going to swamp them. And this isn't drain the swamp. This is we're going to swamp them. We're also going to drain the swamp. It's a double swamp. Pennsylvania's where our founding fathers declared American independence. So much history. I mean, you have so much history here. Just think of it. It's where the Army weathered its brutal winter. We're sort of weathering it right now, but I don't think. Theirs was much worse. It's where the Army weathered its brutal winter at Valley Forge, where General George Washington led his men on a daring mission across the Delaware, and where our Union was saved by the immortal heroes at Gettysburg. Gettysburg, what an unbelievable battle that was.
Okay, we don't have to hear that again. There it is. Yes, we don't have to fight that war again. Meanwhile, Speaker Mike Johnson on Fox News, where else, was indicating why he is making a demand of Chuck Schumer, the Senate Majority Leader. Go ahead.
We did a long, methodical, deliberate process, as the Constitution it requires of us, and we got that done. And now we're transmitting it to the Senate, and we're demanding that Chuck Schumer have the full trial, that they hear the evidence, let us put it on for the American people, and then remove this individual from office. This desperate times call for desperate measures, and Secretary Mayorkas is, in my view, the worst cabinet secretary that has ever served in the history of the United States. It is a catastrophe that was committed by design. They allowed this. We all know the facts and the terrible tragedies that have come from it, and there has to be accountability.
Okay, the idea of a full trial right now in the Senate, and where there is literally no chance of getting the two-thirds vote to remove him from office. And what happened, were Trump's impeachment trials somehow uplifting, positive for the country? When you look back, was the Clinton impeachment positive for the country? None of this works. And the idea that this is going to somehow lead to some kind of gain nationally or even politically, I think it's dubious. And what it has led to has been more Republicans. Thomas Massie, who's a sort of a lone wolf in the House of Representatives, but he, as a representative from Kentucky, very libertarian-oriented conservative, he said this to CNN's Manu Raju, clip two.
Yes. Yeah, I asked him to resign.
What did he say?
He said he would not. And then I said, well, you're the one who's going to put us into this. Because the motion is going to get called, okay? Does anybody doubt that? The motion will get called. And then he's going to lose more votes than Kevin McCarthy.
Okay, so we're talking about now not just the impeachment of Secretary Mayorkas, but we're talking about this. There is Mediaite is reporting that prosecutors in New York in the former President Donald Trump's hush money trial are suggesting that he face 30 days in jail for violating the gag order imposed on him by Judge Juan Merchan in a new court filing. This court should again admonish defendant to comply with his obligations under the order. And finally, this court should warn defendant that future violations of the court's restrictions on his extrajudicial statements can be punished not only with additional fines, but also with an incarceration of up to 30 days. That is what the relevant portion of the filing submitted by Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg has said. More that goes on here with Trump continuing to violate the gag order. I actually believe he wants to be sent to jail. They could send him for 4 days. No, it doesn't have to be 30 days. And would that increase sympathy for President Trump and seem to support his view that he is now a victim of political interference, which he talks about? Speaking of political interference, there is a question about religion as a dividing line in the United States. We talked about the Pew study that said recently that among religious conservatives, Christian conservatives, the Republican Party has been gaining some strength, not losing, but gaining. And the question then becomes, why is it that religion now is so much a turning point? There's a column, and a fascinating column, that says, in politics, one thing rules above all, religion. Why is that the case right now? And we will talk about what that means. I also I think that it's important that we take a further look at some of the utter craziness of some of the pro-Hamas demonstrators. Some of them in New York City lit an American flag on fire while another protester held up a sign saying, "Free Palestine or else." Other protesters were raising the Hezbollah flag and chanting, "Death to America." I think they are the ones out of touch, because we will continue to assume and work for a vibrant life and, in fact, rebirth for this greatest nation on God's green earth.